So anyway, good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 9th January 2022, Sunday. So today we will be continuing from this sharing. Fourth lesson of the 6th Patriarch's Platform Sutta. We are at page 50. We will continue from there. So Sister Chui asked a question. Relative, you talk about people like Eckhart Tolle and so on. I'm just wondering, in the Buddhist world, if a man of this nature come out and he doesn't speak English, is he recognized as someone of that standing? I mean, you said that, but I don't know whether the Buddhist world recognizes people like them. So the way I answer her is, very good. You all should actually listen. But this is to avoid misunderstanding and division or argument. I told her, okay, so the question is, people like Eckhart Tolle and J. Krishnamurti, they speak in different languages, means not the usual Dhamma language. They don't use normal Dhamma terms or words when they share the teaching or the truth. So the question is, does the Buddhist world or community recognize such person? To me, it's not important because truth is truth. Whatever that is the truth will point towards the reality. And whatever truth that can help humanity is more important than having argument or division. Why do we want to segregate ourselves? We are arguing whether such a person or such a person's teaching is Buddhist or non-Buddhist. That is a very important understanding. Otherwise, division will continue. Then our criteria is no longer to investigate into truth. Our criteria is like obscured by the understanding or the very narrow-minded aspect of, is this Buddhist? If it's not, I don't want to recognize it. I don't want even to listen to it. We don't want to have anything to do with non-Buddhists. So if you take that stand, that is very dangerous, because that is not what the Buddha actually told the Kalamas. What the Buddha told the Kalamas is, he said to the Kalamas that you don't even have to believe him. You just have to investigate into everything that is spoken, even by him. So don't believe first. We have blind faith is dangerous. Investigate first. If it's the truth, it must stand up to investigation. So when it comes to whether Buddhist or non-Buddhist, it's just a label, isn't it? How do we define Buddhist? If you say it doesn't tell you the Buddha's teaching, then it is non-Buddhist. It is a fair way of expressing it. Is it fair, Chui? So, before I move on to Chui, I would like to explain a bit more. Because that word, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Christian, I am whatever religion, is a very loose word. And it doesn't define anything. Well, in this world, a lot of people claim themselves to be Christians, to be Buddhists, to be Hindu, or whatever. Yeah. But that label doesn't qualify you to be a spiritual person or to be a religious person. You may be a Buddhist, but you don't know the Buddhist teaching, the Buddha's teaching. Or even if you have some knowledge of the Buddha's teaching, but you didn't follow the advice of the Buddha, to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind to develop wisdom, to liberate your mind. So how can you claim to be a Buddhist and yet don't have all this understanding? Similarly, for other religions, it's the same, Christianity or whatever. It's the embodiment of Jesus' love and compassion and wisdom is not with you, and yet you say, I'm a Christian. So all these people are to glorify their own religion because they have strong attachment to that label, because to them, their whole foundation of belief system depend on that label. If that label doesn't stand up, then they will be looked down upon. Their whole belief system collapse. That is where the fear is. And because of that, people tend to cling on to the religious label. To me, to be worthy of your own religious label, you must at the least understand what your religious teacher is teaching. Then cultivate it. Develop the understanding of it. Then you have that worthiness to call yourself a Buddhist or a Christian. Otherwise, it's just a label. So just like any profession in the world, it could be any profession, lawyers, engineers, doctors, or any profession like accountants or what. There are a lot of black sheep within the community. So calling yourself by that label actually doesn't mean much. Maybe in our society, you call yourself an accountant means you have an accountant degree. But is that degree recognized? Or is that degree an online degree where you can buy? Then what is the criteria for having all this professional label? So we have to be careful. The label have a tendency to mislead. So based on that, we should avoid prejudicing truth by just ignoring it or has nothing to do with it because you believe it's non-Buddhist, not following your religious label. But how much do you know about your own religion, your own religion's teaching, the true teaching? So this is what we have to develop understanding so as to avoid the mistake of division, attachment, clinging, leading to misunderstanding and argument. So when we have this understanding, we are in the position to investigate truth. Then whatever that is being spoken, we give ourselves a chance to listen attentively and find out whether it's the truth or not. If it's not the truth or not in accordance or you cannot understand, then have an open mind. Just let things be. Instead of coming out with all this argument, division, leading to more and more misunderstanding. This is to avoid conflict, to avoid misunderstanding from arising. That's why we have religious war. We have all the, what they call, belief system that created so much misunderstanding. And the world is not peaceful is because we hold on to the words, the religious label. So hopefully with this understanding, we can move on. Okay, I will continue with the sharing. Then next page, page 51. Yeah. So Sister Chui replied, he said, my point is all this thing about religion, whether Buddhism, Ryan Rachel, blah blah blah, are meaningless. You actually look at the greater picture of things, because they are beings. There are beings all over the world, or place, who have such wonderful realization and are walking on the path. So to me, I'm sorry. You guys are all Buddhists here. You know, Buddhism actually is nothing to me. So according to Chui, it's just a way of life. It's not a religion, it's nothing. Bowing and all that stuff is a way of showing respect. But that's about all. And I have to maybe clarify, I say, so what is your question? Just now you asked me, is it right for Buddhists to accept them? Then she continued to explain, how does the Buddhist in a way look at this type of people? Because if you follow the Buddhist tradition, which many people do, they want to do dana, they want to do this and that, which are the Buddhist way or approach to their religious activity and ceremony. But in actual fact, these people doesn't do it in that way. Yet, they are great beings. That's why Chui has a point. Then I say, okay, now I get you. And Chui, she tried to say something so to me, but I interrupted because I knew what direction she was approaching this question. And I replied, I said, earlier on, I thought you tried to segregate them from the so-called Buddhists. Then Chui said, yeah, no. I'm not looking for trouble. I'm just trying to say that Buddhism is just a label, which is very good. Now I understand what you are trying to find out, which is very good. So when you have the understanding, like what Sister Chui has just explained, it will be very beautiful. Because you must have an open mind. Do you understand? What do you mean by Buddhist? Like just now, I tried to explain it via saying, whatever that tallies with the teachings of the Buddha, you call it Buddhist, right? But it's taught by the Buddha, because it's taught by the Buddha. But how many of you really understand the Buddhist teaching? There are many questions. Sorry, there is another question. The Buddha's teaching is about truth, about Dhamma. And this teaching is very deep and very penetrative. That's why I say when it comes to truth, like just now, Sister Chui realized that there are so many of these type of great beings who also have the truth and the understanding. Truth doesn't need a word. That's why Jaya Krishnamurti's teaching was so powerful. And they are so identical with those of the Buddha's teaching. But people cannot understand because they look at the words. And when they cling onto the words, their teaching appear like very contradictory, because they cannot understand what was shared. What they try to share with us are beyond words and beyond thoughts. That's why he always mentioned in his sharing, Jaya Krishnamurti said, never take the word for what it is, because the word is not the thing. So this one, I think most of you can understand. Then when he used a lot of those important terminology that he came out with, if you don't understand them, then it appears like they are very contradictory. So the example that I will give you is, why did Krishnamurti say never take the word for it? It is because the word is not that thing. Like we create a word, tree, T-R, E-E. We say that is a tree. But actually that thing that you are pointing to In English, we label it as tree. But in reality, that thing doesn't have any words. So the word tree, we know very clearly, it's not that thing, is it? That tree, T-R-E-E, is just a word, an English word. And it's got nothing to do with that thing that it's pointing at. But we use word to label it. That's why Dhamma become difficult to penetrate. Because different people point towards the same tree and they label it differently. To a Mandarin speaking person, he said, Su is tree in Mandarin. Yeah. Then in Bahasa Malaysia, it's of course pokok. Oh. Different language create different words, but all these words points towards the same thing, that tree. So truth is the same. Truth doesn't need words. But to share, to describe, to explain, we need to use words. Because human beings are limited by the mundane mind, which is basically concept and words. Yeah. So if you don't have this understanding, you can be deceived. So reason why Jai Krishnamurti said never take the word for what it is, because the word is not that thing. That's why the Buddha said, we learn to meditate, to see things as they are. Means not using word. Not using idea or the thought process. Means the pure direct seeing. When we see truth, reality, there is no word. That's why when you have the pure seeing, the direct seeing, you see things as they are, suchness. But when mundane people see, they create label through words, through memory, through concept that they are so conditioned to. That's why that type of seeing is false seeing, not the direct seeing, not the pure perception. You are not seeing things as they are. You are seeing things according to your views, opinion, and conditioning based on your memory. Yeah, you are so conditioned to recognize all these things with words, with concept, with ideas, with whatever belief system you are holding on to. So this is where misunderstanding can arise, can occur. So as a cultivator of the way, if we have the mindfulness, awareness, the sati, or the clarity of the true mind, then we can understand all this. We can see all this. Then we can make use of it. Because within the conditioned world, we have to use thought. The human being is mainly driven by thought process. And the universal language of humanity is still language. Still the mundane mind, the thought process from memory. So all this, if we develop understanding, then we become different. Okay, with that explanation, I will move on. So I will reread the last sentence. Then when Jai Krishnamurti used a lot of those important terminology that he came out with himself, if you don't understand what he said or what he mean, then it appears like they are contradictory. That's why when he said, wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. Surely you cannot agree with him anymore. Then when he said, wherever there is effort, there is no meditation, then you may even quote the Noble Eightfold Path as taught by the Buddha as having right effort. Hence, Jay Krishnamurti is talking rubbish. Based on that, you actually come to that conclusion. Then you say, because he is contradicting the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. But when you have the understanding, there is no contradiction at all. The Noble Eightfold Path's right effort are applicable only when you are dealing with the thought process. That's why there is a path factor called right thought, then right effort with regards to action, speech, and thought. But when it comes to meditation or purification of mind, it is all about mindfulness. There is no more effort. It's about cultivating with the silent mind, the true mind. It's about awareness only, no more thought. That's the reason why Jay Krishnamurti Jay Krishnamurti used the word awareness. That's also the reason why nowadays people also start to use this word awareness more and more. Words like choiceless awareness, etc. Then Eckhart Tolle used the word power of now. What does it mean? This moment, before the words and the concept arise, there is only an awareness here, the true mind. Just the clear and pure awareness. That's why he said, there is a portal for you to go in to connect to the true mind. And Eckhart Tolle is actually quite wise, not bad. His portal is through the feeling portal. From pure feeling, before the stirring of the mind, you go in. You silence your mind to develop the awareness. You feel and you go in. And these are the portals that can take you in to your true mind, your true nature. Then there are many other great beings who came and explained the truth in their own words. Even like Bhayam Kathy's inquiry into the thought via her four lines of reasoning or questioning. So number one, he said, whenever the thought tells you something, she said, inquire. Is this the truth? That is the first inquiry or line of questioning. Then number two is, are you sure this is the truth? So the first two questions, you will definitely say yes, because this is what your thought actually tells you. Then the third and fourth question or line of questioning, she will corner you. Number three, the line of questioning is, what happened if you think that thought? You become miserable, isn't it? And afflicted, right? Then number four, what happened if you don't think that thought? You are peaceful, right? Then you realize that it's not the truth. Because when you say, my husband cheated on me, I hate him, I want to do something to take revenge upon him. When you set your line of inquiry, one, is it the truth? What the thought tell you? You will definitely say, yes, it's the truth. Well, you saw him cheat on me, and you have proof that he cheated on you. And because of that, you say, I hate him. So to you, you are very convinced that it is the truth. Then she asked the second question, are you sure this is the absolute truth? You definitely answer, yes, 100% is the truth. And then the third question is, what happened if you think that thought? You develop more anger. You develop more jealousy. And you also develop hatred, isn't it? Then the fourth line of questioning is, what happened if you don't think that thought? Before you develop all the anger, the jealousy, the hatred, before all these things come in, you are peaceful, isn't it? When you were courting you're very peaceful. So without this thought, you don't have anger, you don't have hatred. No anger and no sadness. Then how come when you think that thought, all this problem leading to suffering come about? Then you start to understand that thought is the one that created all this delusion and division. You and him. Why can't you accept him for what he is? If I don't think that thought, I am peaceful. If I don't divide him as cheating me or doing what on me and all those things, then I become peaceful. And her solution to all this is very simple. The truth is that you cannot fight with the reality. The reality is such, condition like that, things will like that. So if you have the wisdom to see things as they are, to accept him for what he is, then you are at peace with him. Then you will not react still and get angry with him. Deluded people do deluded things. Selfish people do selfish things. Lustful people do lustful things. He is just the way he is. If I can accept him for what he is, this form of mind can be at peace. Then you will know how to act and move. Then you will not harm yourself through getting angry, emotional, or allowing the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion to arise. Stirring your mind with jealousy and becoming miserable over what happened. All these are very simple solutions to human suffering. And although she didn't use the word like the Four Noble Truths, but her teaching indeed finally points towards the Four Noble Truths. It points towards delusion as the cause of suffering. When you don't think that wrong thought, you realize there is no such problem. Meaning that the thought is telling you, meaning what the thought is telling you is a delusion and it's not the truth. But because of your mundane mind that grabs onto this mundane conventional truth, according to people who are deluded with self-delusion and sakkayaditti. That's why most people suffer. So all this, when you really penetrate and understand, you will come to realize that what they have realized has a lot of similarity with what Sakyamuni Buddha is trying to teach you. It is the Four Noble Truths, put it another way, through inquiry. That's how you break the wrong thought and your self-delusion, sakkayaditti. You will come to understand how you create thought, how you create true thought, how thought divides, and how you create duality and all those negativities. And to her, another day, the reality is the most important. Truth is, she said, you cannot go against the truth. The moment you go against the truth, you suffer. Then when she has that understanding, she develops the acceptance of what is. What is the reality, is the truth. It's just like the Buddha said, sitting as they are, suchness, ta-ta-ta. And when she accepts what is the truth or the reality or suchness, she becomes peaceful. When she becomes peaceful, she knows how to act, how to live. Then she will know how to arise the right thought, right speech, right action. And she will know how to live life, which is the right livelihood. And because she can accept and be at peace, that's why she can develop the silence within, the stillness. And she can develop the meditative understanding. Then finally, she will come to know clearly who she is, what she is. That's how she will come to know the mind, the condition arising mind, and the true mind. the two are different. When she is silent, we are having the wisdom to accept what is, she is at peace. When she is not silent, the mind stir, thought arise, create all those wrong thoughts that condition her suffering and misery. Then she realizes delusion has set in, sakayadhiti has set in, attachment has come to be. So all these are the understanding that can happen. All this finally, if you trace back, they actually point towards the same truth. So when you start to have that understanding, your mind will have the ability to open up, meaning has an open mind. Yeah? When your mind has the ability to open up, meaning you are able to have an open mind. You will not become like very attached to the religious label. Just like how Sister Chui understand that religious label is actually just a label. It doesn't define who you are actually. Religious label is just something that living beings use to create division and identity. I'm a Buddhist. Means he's a follower of Sakyamuni Buddha's teaching. And because of that, he thinks he is religious by implication or by direct association. You cannot do that because when you don't truly understand the Buddhist teaching or the Buddha's teaching, and you cannot put it into practice, you are far from being a true Buddhist. Even that label, you also don't qualify to use. We are calling yourself a true Buddhist. A true Buddhist is somebody who follows the advice of the Buddha so as to be worthy of him. And to have a quality, to have the quality of a true Buddhist, you must follow his teaching at least to avoid all evil by keeping the precept and to do wholesomeness and goodness through cultivating noble eightfold path and to purify the mind, to meditate, to develop wisdom. If you have this quality, only then is meaningful, meaning all those who follow the advice of great beings, they have the truth, they have the Dhamma, then they are no longer using the religious label only. They are different from those who only use the religious label and don't cultivate, which means they do not have the embodiment of the great being's teaching, yet they claim to be Buddhist. Then it is a totally different thing. That label doesn't qualify them to be a Buddhist. So I always use this word, religious label is just a label. Whether you are spiritual or non-spiritual depends on your heart, your goodness, your kindness, your sincerity. And if you don't have goodness, kindness, sincerity, and love or compassion in your heart, you can hold on to any religious label, but you are not spiritual at all. You are only spiritual when you have the good heart, a good mind. When you have love, compassion, and understanding, then you are incapable of negativity. That really defines a religious person or a spiritual person. So spirituality is about understanding, not about the religious label. Okay? With that, you will be able to move on and progress with an open mind. Then you will not get trapped in all the religious labels issue and argue an argument. Because most of these followers, they just want to argue based on that religious label. And they are too eager to glorify their own religion through argument, through what they call promoting their religious belief and through trying to monopolize truth, because every religion claims to profess the truth and they want to monopolize the truth. Only my religion has the truth. All other religions are not the truth. If you do that, it shows that you do not understand truth. The truth is, and the meaning is very deep, truth cannot be monopolized by anyone. Meaning not your truth, not my truth, or anybody else's truth. For truth is nature's law. Anything that explains the way things are, according to what happened, that is the truth. And that truth cannot be monopolized. That is nature's law, nothing else. That's why the scientists came to know that there is such a thing as nature's law, nature's physical law and biological order. And they realized that there is a lot of consensus when you understand those laws. So likewise, when it comes to spiritual understanding, you also have the spiritual law that governs life and existence. If you penetrate them, you will also progress very fast. And like the scientists, you will come to understand a lot of things within the spiritual field. That's how Sakyamuni Buddha became so wise, the fully enlightened one. That he has this all-knowing great wisdom born of his cultivation and perfection over the aeons and aeons of cultivation. He has developed a very penetrative understanding of these three great laws of nature: the spiritual law of karma, spiritual law of mind, and the spiritual law of truth or dhamma. And these three great spiritual laws, when you develop the understanding of them, the mind will awaken and you will understand what that Buddha nature is, what the true nature is, what the oneness nature is, what the original nature is, and all of religion who hold the truth will point towards the same nature, nothing else. And that nature has no word. It is the unconditioned. That's why the Buddha explained it very clearly and very, very well. We are stating that Nirvana is the unconditioned. Likewise, it is similar to the Tao's definition. Whatever that can be spoken, described, or talked about is not the true Tao. But nothing is apart from the Tao. Then what can Tao be? That's why it's like the unconditioned. Nothing is apart from the oneness, the unconditioned, because the condition is also part of the unconditioned. But the condition and the unconditioned are duality that people create. That's why now the scientists also come to know it's from the source or the singularity or the original nature that all things arise. Remember, the singularity is the starting point, the source. Buddhism call it original nature, Tanlai, the Mianmu, your true nature. Original nature before things arise. That's why from the singularity, everything comes to be. Then the division starts, the unconditioned and the conditioned manifest. Then the true nature and the conditioned world. That's how the mundane mind arises, and from there, the first thought of ignorant condition, subsequent thought. The Surangama Sutta explained it very clearly, how living beings come about, how the universe, the star, the planets come about. That's why Buddhism, which is a very unique teaching, is very ultimate in the sense that it goes back to the source. It can connect and link everything back to the source of all things. And it's not only very scientific, it's also very profound, where it is beyond science. Science is limited to thought, the five mental aggregates of form and mind, the consciousness. But spiritual understanding that the Buddha has realized is actually beyond thought, beyond time. That's why it is the pure nature, the oneness nature, the original or true nature, the source of all things, the singularity. That's why from there everything comes to be. That's the reason why whatever that can be known, the Sammasambuddha can understand and know, because he had realized the enlightenment, which is complete and perfect, that enable their nature to return to the original starting point, which is the source of all things. From there, the oneness nature will arise and it will understand all things. So this is the uniqueness of the Buddhist teaching. And that one is very difficult to comprehend. Not until you have cultivated to that stage, it is not easy to comprehend. But it is very beautiful. Okay? So let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We should thank Sister Chui for that condition by asking that rather good question. Then Chui replied, relative, just as a joke, kai wan xiao. Your next talk at SJBA will be, are you sure you are a Buddhist? That will be very useful. I think that title is very good. Are you sure you are a Buddhist? Then I replied, I said, we can, yes. I think the next clang talk is at the end of the month. I don't know what is the title. I think I can use the title you suggested for my clang talk. I need to check it out. I remember I have a talk, but what is the title? I forgot. Oh, okay. Please check. July this month is a Friday. Searching for the title of the clang talk. Or I can use Jewish topic because this Tipitaka Sutta 1 and 2 I have finished already. Yeah. Are you sure you are a true Buddhist? Can be a good title. I will tell Brother Gan to use this topic. That title should be useful because many Buddhists, they tend to argue with people. They say, no, no, no. Because they always want to be protective of Buddhism. Actually, the more they try to protect, the more conflict you will end up with. If it is the truth, it will stand up to investigation. Why do you want to argue with people? People have the right to come to their own conclusion and believe. They are just the way they are. So having clear understanding helps. It's just like the early years, which I remembered. They tried to create a hoo-ha in the Buddhist community. Do you all remember the Buddha Bar incident? The Buddha Bar was a restaurant chain, if I'm not wrong. They do sell liquor, they drink, they entertain. But I don't know if they are involved in prostitution or not. They put the Buddha image in their bar. Then they call it the Buddha Bar. You go to a bar and you drink in front of the Buddha, the Buddhists are not happy, so they created a big hoo-ha. And I think there was an uprising. A lot of people put in their comments at that time, about 8 to 9 years ago. Means this book was written, the transcript was 2018. I think the year 2010 must be. Or 2008 or around those years. I saw what was happening then. And if this is allowed to go on, it will not stop because I saw a lot of so-called Buddhists started writing to condemn what happened. Then I wrote one email to explain the situation. And after that, surprisingly, all turned down because I said, the Buddha Rupang place at the bar is not the Buddha. According to the Buddha Rupang or image is only one of the four holy objects of veneration. You can venerate it, meaning you can pay respect to it. They are recalling to mind the nine great virtues, wisdom, loving kindness, and great compassion of Lord Buddha. It means you can recall to mind the true qualities of Lord Buddha, and those are the embodiment of Lord Buddha's great wisdom and virtue. The statue was never the Buddha. So why do you get yourself so upset, so entangled with all these things by believing that they are trying, what they are trying to do or say something bad about your Buddha? I say, whatever you do to the image, will not affect us, because if my so-called Buddha is so easily contaminated or made defiled by just what people do, then the Buddha has no meaning. The Buddha that I have taken refuge and have faith in is not the statue. It's the embodiment of his great wisdom, perfection, virtue and understanding, including all his love and compassion. Those things nobody can take away from us, despite what they do to the image. If you understand this, you should not create all this unnecessary argument and all this so-called infighting. We are using word or whatever to condemn. The way I wrote it, I cannot recall, but it was very beautiful. It's in the email, stored up somewhere, and I said it in a very subtle manner, but very meaningfully. The great embodiment of Sakyamuni Buddha or all Sammasambuddha is their wisdom and perfections that they have developed, which are virtue, love and compassion. These qualities or perfection, nobody can take it away from the Buddha. That is part of their spiritual nature. And when you have faith in that, which is the Buddha that we take refuge in, then we are not affected. And this is refuge safe, because the Buddha is not the image, the rupang. The image is just a symbol for us to recall to mind his great quality. Hence, nothing can defile the Buddha. That's why I do not associate with all those who do not understand the meaning of what is true refuge. When you understand your true refuge, you are not shaken by what people do. They can do and disfigure the Buddha image, like what happened in Afghanistan, where the Bayang people bomb, deface, and disfigure the image of the Buddha statue. Still, there is no problem, because that one is not the Buddha. Do you understand? Only foolish people think that that is the Buddha. If that is the Buddha, then the refuge which I take has no meaning. One bomb can just destroy the image. So that is not the refuge we all took. That's why the Triple Gem, the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, they cannot, or they can never be taken away, because these are the embodiments of great wisdom and great virtue. And the great wisdom and great virtue that make that being, the fully enlightened one, is not something that you can take away. Where there is the embodiment of his perfection over eons and eons of cultivation, and he has become a nature of his own. And that nature has its special power and special ability. That's why when you take refuge with faith in the Buddha and his teaching or Dhamma, you will have affinity with the Buddha and his wisdom and perfection that he has perfected. That's how he will have the understanding of the Dhamma. Then when the Dhamma is there, when he teaches, there will be the Sangha, which are the enlightened disciples of the Buddha. That's why all these three, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, they are refuge safe. They will never be shaken by anything that people do or the world do, because these are the embodiments of perfection that can be realized. And this is part of nature's law, and it cannot be taken away by anybody through whatever act or means. When you have that understanding and faith, your religious label doesn't matter anymore. Then you are not hurt by what people say about Buddhism. Well, Buddhism is just a label. Before the advent of the Buddha, there was no Buddhism. But because he was the Buddha, they add in the ism at the back. The ism makes his teaching become Buddhism. But what is Buddhism? Buddhism is actually not what people think. It's not a religious label that everybody who is an author of a book can define. Buddhism was never around when Buddha was around. When the Buddha was around, he said he only helped to re-proclaim the truth or the Dhamma, which are already there before him. The Dhamma was there before him, and after he had realized it, he proclaimed it. And when he did that, he declared it to the world, that this is the teaching that points towards the truth, because all of his teaching points towards the truth. That's why the main core teaching, or the essence of his teaching, is the Four Noble Truths, Arya Satya. All the teachings of the Buddha is called the Dhamma or truth. The essential or the essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truths. Not only truth, but they are noble truths. That's why his teaching is very unique. When you understand this noble truth, you become noble ones or enlightened ones. So he not only teaches us the truth, he teaches us the noble truth that can make living beings enlightened. That's why he is very unique. And to be worthy of him, to be called a true Buddhist, you must at least heed his advice. Follow his advice to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind to cultivate the Four Noble Truths. Not until you have the Four Noble Truths understanding to enable you to live life, you are still not worthy of him, and you cannot label yourself as a true devotee of the Buddha or call yourself a true Buddhist. Then that religious label is just a name that people hold on to. For me, it is not important. When people ask me, are you a Buddhist? I always answer this way. Do you know what my answer was? I would just say that I started as a Buddhist, because that was the first religious teaching that touches my heart and started my search for spiritual truth. I was looking for answer when I was in Form 4 or Form 5, means 1970 and 71. I knew it was beyond me. You know, at that time, I was gazing at the stars in the night sky. Then I asked myself, who am I? What am I? I was only one of the insignificant 5 or 6 billion of people. At that time, the world population was not 6 billion yet, maybe 5+ billion on earth. How come I was only one of the miserable human beings on this earth, and earth is only one of the many planets that orbits around the sun, and this sun is only one of the many, many, many stars that existed in the universe? I knew all this because I was a science student. So I knew human being is very insignificant. But I also knew that at the age of 17, while in Phong Phai in the year 1971, that I must meditate to understand all this. But I didn't know how to meditate. Sorry, but I didn't even know what meditation was then. I only knew I must meditate to understand. So very strange. The moment I was given this book, What Buddhists Believe, authored by the late Chief Reverend Kesari Dhammananda, the first edition, when I was in Lower Six, I remember then, straight away, I didn't have to search anymore, because when I was in Form 5, I went to all other religious organizations to search except Buddhism. I didn't want to look at Buddhism was because of what my mother was doing. Okay, maybe I read this part accordingly. I didn't want to go into Chinese or Buddhist temple then, was because at that time when I saw my mother doing all those things, such as offering and negotiating with the deities, they are saying, you help me, then I will offer you more. Like you help my son or my children to pass exam, recover from their sickness, then I will offer you more. Then I say, wow, this type of Buddhism, I will carry. Then I went in search for truth. They took me to the churches, the temples, the other religious place. We talked to the pastor until the pastor also gave up. And the pastor said, you wait. My more senior and higher one will come. We talk, but he also gave up on us. Then we went to many other religions, including Baha'i, which was also not able to convince us. Finally, the conclusion was that we were too scientific, because when you tell us God create, we cannot accept. My question to them is, then who created God? Then they will reply, we are saying, God is almighty, you cannot ask this type of question. Then I cannot just believe, because for me it is very simple. If you say God created, then everything must have a creator. So who created God? There must also be a time in history when God creates. Then my question is, what was God doing before he created? That was the question by Stephen Hawking too. He was very wise. He wanted to know before God created, where you say there was a beginning in time, when everything started with God's creation. So assuming there is a moment in history where all creation start, and that moment you can define. So before God create, what was God doing? To the scientists, they know nothing can be created nor destroyed. How can you have something before anything? So again, the question was unanswered. So Stephen Hawking was very wise. Actually, you don't need a God to create the universe. Hence, he said, when the Big Bang start, you don't need a God. That's how the Big Bang theory became popular. Big Bang is the beginning of time. They call it the singularity or the source. From one, that moment it all started, is the black hole, which becomes so intense, so saturated, that it started all over again. Then the expanding universe start again. That was what scientists came to realize. That's why from the singularity, everything starts again. So with the understanding, I just let things be. And then the book came when I was in Form 6. My classmate sister gave me the late Chief Reverend K. Srinamanza's book, What Buddhists Believe. That was the first book I received. It was the first edition, a red thin copy. It was written that what my mother has been doing are rites and ritual, all pertaining to the Chinese culture, the Taoist practice, etc. And they have nothing to do with Buddhism. Wow, suddenly my heart rejoiced, for I knew why I had not in the first place check out on what Buddhism was. Then the moment I saw the Four Noble Truths, straight away the insight like new, no need to search anymore. That's it. I said, nobody 2,600 over years ago can summarize all of his enlightenment and understanding into just Four Noble Truths so beautifully. At that time, I straight away understood the Four Noble Truths the moment I read it. I then said, nobody can summarize all of life, both the mundane and supramundane, into just Four Noble Truths. Even at that time, I told myself that if I were to awaken like the Sammasambuddha Sakyamuni, I also cannot summarize all my understanding into just the Four Noble Truths. No way. That's the reason why after that, I said to myself, no need to search. And my nature straight away told me that this was the truth. And from then on, I never turned back. I was really determined to understand this teaching and cultivate all the way. And I was very lucky because of my past cultivation that had helped me so much. The moment I got that book, I made the determination to cultivate sincerely and accordingly. I did very well in my Form 6 and I was able to get myself admitted to University of Malaya, MU, where I did my civil engineering course. On the first day at that university, Because of affinity, I met our late Chief Reverend Kesari Dhammananda. Then the rest was history. So that was how my investigative Dhamma came about. That's how all the understanding came about. Then later on, after I read through those Dhamma books, I met many teachers and guides. Later on, I had the opportunity to come into contact with various type of other teachings. The books just came, the teacher, the guide, etc. They just came. Every one was very different, and I didn't know them. Then within those 3 years, 1986 till 89, everything just came and transformation just happened. That nature that understands will have an open mind and it can accept everything. Whatever that is the truth, it understands. That it can relate to truth clearly. That's how when Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, came out. After I had come out to share at the request of Dhamma friend, I can understand his book, and his book at that time was already very famous. They showed me the book. Most of the time, after I go through the book, I will tell them, never mind. This one you all can go and read yourself because the book is not harmful. Then when I read that book, I realized that this book is very different from the rest. I told them this is a very good book, a very great book, because the way it can explain what happens to him in the book's introduction on how he went into that stillness state and how he came out of it and then how he suddenly understood the Dhamma, I can understand what happened. And I knew he had his past, otherwise he cannot become what he is or like that. Earlier on, he went through severe depression. That if you read the book, the introduction section, you will come to know how he actually went in and how he came out from those states. Then after that, how he completely understood the truth. Just before it happened, he was fighting with the thought. Yeah, he was in great depression. His mind was very depressed. He was in great depression. Then suddenly that thought came out and said, if I cannot accept all those that happened to him, it means there is another thought which cannot accept all this wrong thought. He was thinking deep into life. Then he realized almost everybody, including the pastor, lied to him. Oh, sorry, including the pastor, they also lied. Do you know the church pastor? Sometimes they also lie, cheat, and deceive. He realized his father also lied, his parents also lied, his friend also lied, and he himself also lied. Then the inner nature said, this is wrong, and I cannot accept all this. Then in the midst of deep depression, suddenly that thought awakened. He said, if there is another thought that say he cannot accept all this thought, it means there are two of this in me. Then all of a sudden, the mind went blank. Pop! No more thought. Went into cessation because that spark triggered on. And he went inside. The whole of consciousness went into cessation deep inside for a few hours. Then all of a sudden when he came out of it again, he became totally different. Then when he looked at his own room again, it was like he has never seen it before. Wow! All of a sudden, everything was so pristine and so beautiful, starting with the light coming in through the window. Then he said everything was so pristine because at that time, the mundane mind must have collapsed. And the true mind came out. That's how he can understand all teachings that point towards truth after that. Before he understood the teaching he was still a nobody. After he came out, he described in his own book, everything was like totally new, so pristine. And he could feel the great stillness, the silence, the tranquility, the beauty, and the deep joy inside him. But he didn't know what all this was. Then he didn't work. He just sat in the park for about 2 years. And he didn't complete his PhD too. But he was very full of joy, full of happiness, so serene, so peaceful that people found him very amusing and went there to talk to him. Then after a while, people asked him about religious things. He said, I don't understand. They show him the book. They quote the phrases. The moment he heard this truth, he understood. Then people got interested in him. That's how he became famous and decided to come out to share his understanding. Then he started to write books. All this can come about was because he had gone through that cessation. He had realized the awakening. Then later on, he also knew about the segmented body and mind, but not as clear as the way I had described to you all. He also mentioned, if you choose to come, you have to go through that period of suffering before you connect. He used the word, before you connect also, to your true nature. We are that segmented life. He has to suffer because he came that way. He suffered experiencing severe depression. That's why after that, wherever there is truth, when he reads them, he will understand. Then J. Krishnamurti's book was even more difficult to understand. I think we stop here. J. Krishnamurti, we stop here. Okay, we are at page 69. Yeah. Oh, 70, sorry. Yeah. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Yeah. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind state that you need to use to live your life, to develop the daily mindfulness, the heedfulness, to continue with your training in daily life. Okay, so we will now move on to our second session, which is meditation reporting, followed by whatever question that you may have regarding the teaching, the meditation, and also how you can apply this teaching to help you understand life and live life, to solve your whatever life problems or situation.
I like to say something.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be good. Yes.
Yeah. Brother Teo, firstly, I like to say my gratitude to Brother Teo, because we owe so much to Brother Teo, but actually I owe a lot to Brother Teo, and to the Triple Gem Brother Teo, for your teaching and then for your guidance, more importantly, your guidance, because if you didn't guide us, at least for me as well, our path will be like very chaotic and messy, because we have to we have to figure out our understanding, somehow you light up the path for us, make it very clear to us,
and sometimes easy to comprehend and then calculate. Otherwise, it's not easy because a lot of questions, a lot of doubt, a lot of things which are not clear. That's why this teaching is not easy to come by. Unless you really meet somebody who has the understanding. Otherwise, it's very easy. Not easy. Really not easy. What you say is very true. I can understand why you are so full of gratitude and appreciative towards what you have received and developed as understanding. Yeah, it's not easy to come by, like what you say, very true.
So, Brother Teo, really, yeah. This is a time for us to be joyful and then have yeah. lots of faith and gratitude towards Brother Teo for your
yes.
teaching and guidance, you know.
Yes, Brother Teo, yeah.
It shorten our training as well, you know, and yes. it's so much yeah. clearer after our sharing. Let's say I share with you something, right? Like last week I share with you. I mean, last yeah. Thursday I share with you. Then yeah. after your talk, your sharing, and to help me guide me
yeah,
with your
yeah.
explanation, right?
Yeah,
Brother Teo,
yeah.
that is really, really helpful, and I have a lot of joy. I listen to yeah, it yes. times already.
Yeah,
I listen to it 2 times already.
Yeah,
and. Yes, and each time I listen, it's different again, you know.
Yeah, okay, very different again. Yeah, yes. Because like I said, unless you create a condition, my nature cannot share further, because unless people have the understanding, then yes. this nature will know that it will move towards that sector or that section that you all need to understand. Then it will unfold, it will come out. So all this, you will start to develop understanding and witness all the movement that arise. The Dhamma is like that. Without causes and conditions, nothing unfolds. You need causes and conditions, and causes and conditions has to come from the cultivator of the way. Unless you create a condition, nothing will manifest. Mm. Which is very true. Sadhu to you, Bojang, for your good understanding. That's why you have that ability to contemplate, reflect, then that joy, that gratitude, and that understanding actually make you different. Because like you came to realize all this while, that this path is not easy. If it's not clearly explained, shared, and guided in this way, then when you experience something, you share it, you ask it, then my nature know where you need further guidance or instruction. That's how the sharing become different, effective, beautiful. Like today one, although it's discussed in the year 2018, it is a very beautiful sharing, because it's about understanding what is it like to be a spiritual cultivator. Spirituality is not about labeling ourselves that I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Christian, I'm a Hindu, or I'm of what religion, devotee of what religion. That one has no meaning. There is a label. You cannot develop the understanding of what your teacher or your religious teacher teach, then that label really doesn't serve any purpose. But when you have developed the understanding of it, then you put it to cultivation, then you become different. You become like a blessing to all. Then you develop the understanding, the joy for yourself, and you can benefit on this. Then you will have this deep understanding and gratitude towards all that made this possible, like what you all went through. That's how I salute to you, which is very good. Yeah.
Yes, as I do, Bratio. Bratio, this book is definitely a very good book lesson, you know, the fourth lesson of the six-by trash. It covers a lot of things, actually, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. And some of it is really deep and profound, you know, like, you know, the part that you share today, you know, and it's also very beautiful the way you have shared it, you know, to give people the understanding about the Rupang, you know, the Buddha Rupang.
At that time, I remember it was a big hoo-ha, because the Buddhist community, like, suddenly they cannot take it anymore. It is like people starts to degrade the Buddha by putting in the image in a bar and allowing all these things to go on. Then being Buddhist, see, the mundane mind is like, hey, I'm a Buddhist. No, Buddha is my teacher. or something very sacred to us Buddhists. How can you put it in a bar? And all those things, all the drinking, the alcohol, and the the whatever thing that people do. But when you don't understand, you look it at a form level, you don't have the penetrative understanding to see things as they are, to develop the understanding of what the triple gem is, what refuge is, then your thought will condition you to react and stir. Then you try to be protective of your religious label. So you end up commenting, arguing, creating all the hoo-ha and all those things. Then this will not stop. Because when you start to do that, people watching you. What type of religion is this? Small thing cannot take and develop until like something very big an issue. That's why finally, luckily, after I sent out the email, the whole thing turned down. Then people didn't even want to talk much about it. Because like J. Krishnamurti, Eckhart Tolle, and even Byron Katie, you will come to know the world is the world, the reality is, truth is. So whatever is the condition behind, things will flow in that particular direction and manner, then it will manifest accordingly. So how we cultivate depends on our understanding. A small thing like that can stir our emotion and cause us suffering and misery, then you better check your cultivation, because this is not the Buddhist way. This is not the Dhamma teaching. The Dhamma teaching is to be at peace, to have the understanding, and to avoid unnecessary division, conflict, argument. That is not the words. It's the understanding of the truth. So the word is the word, but the word does not describe the thing that is supposed to point to. So this understanding is very deep and very important. As cultivator of the way, we should understand. Then we base our argument or difference of opinion on the word people use. Then we argue. Buddha never teach like that. Buddha say got right effort. You say wherever there is effort, there is no meditation. Then you say wherever there is a meditator, there is also no meditation. What type of teaching is that? To meditate, there must be a meditator. They use logic. But they don't understand. When you have a meditator, who is the meditator? What does the meditator do? That is the thought itself. That is the egoic mind. How can you meditate with that? Then you cannot realize your true mind, your silent mind. That's why there is no meditation. And there is nothing wrong with that statement. But people who don't understand, they can ridicule it and comment on it like no need money, they say. So all these are very commonly seen in society, in the various religious community, like the any profession, there are black sheep around. So if you are not a true, sincere cultivator, a spiritual person, you cannot understand all this, then all this will lead to more and more misunderstanding, division, conflict. That's why the world find it very difficult to have peace. Every now and then there is so much problem with the world. Everywhere seems to have problem. Despite the pandemic, now you got earthquake coming, you have flood all the world, then you have new variant, then you have all the various flight issue and problem. Like today, those Malaysian who went over to UK because UK opened up. There was one batch where one of my classmates was there. She was a reporter. She reported, he said, be careful, is it? Because they were having good holiday there in UK. Then they want to fly back. They did the PCR test. The PCR test turned out to be positive for Omicron. So they cannot fly, they cannot go on the flight. So they got to spend another, I don't know how many days, quarantine and all those things, and pay for themselves. And all this is something they didn't foresee. That's why he sent that text and cautioned us. He said, be careful, you want to take all this flight. Because now this Omicron spreading very fast. Oh, and the cases are amazingly a lot. Within 3 days or what, it almost doubled. So these are all data that people has witnessed all over. So we need to pay attention and have some understanding. Unless you absolutely have no choice but need to travel, then be careful. Eh? Otherwise, my advice is wait for a while, develop patience, then make sure everything is okay. Yeah? And if you can have the causes and conditions to go through all this, then maybe you can make that choice. Otherwise, it can cause a lot of disruption and all those things. Mm. And you look at the world, really. It's not easy. Even Malaysia alone, after the pandemic, the flood, after the flood, what else? There's a lot more. So now the flood thing is starting to unravel a lot of hardship, suffering, losses, and all this thing. So all these are realities of life and existence. And I believe Moskayamita, you also witness the reality of life and existence, the reality of aging. Especially when you start to age, you witness a lot. And pandemic, disaster, all the various type of reality that comes with it, health problem, financial problem, relationship problem, separation. So all this can be very traumatic. Then I was told also recently, they say a lot of young people, they died, not because of what, mainly because suicidal thought, committed suicide and all those things. So these are the new phenomena that is evolving. Human mind without Dhamma can be very, very miserable. Affliction can actually cause a lot of traumatic things to happen. But that is life, that's the reality. That's why it's important to have Dhamma, to take care of karma. Otherwise, all this not easy to go. So we'll be able to witness more and more as we go through life. So Pocheng, started to you, you will start to see all these things and have all this realization, which is very good. Anything else you can add?
Thank you, Brother Teo. So much gratitude and thanks to you. Words cannot describe it, like Brother Teo, the gratitude and the thanks that money cannot buy one.
The joy you have understanding this teaching.
It's so much joy reading it. It's so much joy listening to it. It's so much joy experiencing it as well.
Understanding it.
Yes. All these can surface and then make your life so much. Peaceful, calmer, and joyful. Despite the suffering despite all that you experience, could be happiness, but it's very peaceful and calm and joyful too. It's contradicting, but it's joyful,
because you have the Dhamma. That's why you know how to lead life. You understand life, but not everybody has the Dhamma. That's why without the Dhamma, life is not easy. A lot of people actually cannot take it. Then they experience a lot of very traumatic moments. they suffer a lot. There's a lot of affliction. Like everything is not right. Then seldom do they have the joy and the happiness to really live life. Some can't even afford the basic necessity. When pandemic hit, crisis hit, when the reality hit, a lot of people actually suffer, cannot cope. So these are realities that the Buddha taught us under the first noble truth. Then we need to have the true understanding of the second noble truth to understand the cause behind all this, mainly sakkayadity, self-delusion, leading to attachment, craving, clinging, grasping, and the mundane mind holding on to things. That's why our thought become deluded. There is conditioned wrong thought with the evil roots. That's how it stirs and become afflicted, miserable. So all these are very beautiful. Then the third number two says suffering may not be. Enlightenment here and now is possible. And that is really beautiful Dhamma. Then you determine to actually realize this teaching because it is so beautiful. Then you will cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the fourth noble truth, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha to realize the truth and to overcome all of our life situation and problem so that we can really live life to the fullest, get to experience all of the wonders and beauties and pristine wonders of life. So all these are really truly marvelous teaching. That's why true emptiness is wonderful existence. And all these are reachable, realizable. They are not mysterious teaching. That's why you can have the causes and conditions to have good guide and teacher. Then you can have the Dhamma, the truth. Then you can cultivate it correctly to develop all this joy. So these are beautiful things. And with your sharing, I think it gives faith to other Kayamitas too, because it shows to the world that everybody can do it. You have the faith, the sincerity, and you're willing to work hard, persevere. All this can happen, can unfold. Sadhu, what's the name?
Sadhu, Bharatiya, right teacher is very important.
Yeah,
you know? The right teacher, we learn the right thing, we do the right thing, and
yes,
we cultivate correctly the process,
yes,
understanding the process,
right,
is also
right,
very important, you know.
Right.
So we are really grateful to have you as our right teacher, Bharatiya.
Also, your good karmic condition. We are not everybody can receive this truth. If your past karma is not such, you also can't receive this truth and you won't be able to accept what has been shared and spoken to. But because of your past, there are causes and conditions, then you develop the faith, then everything falls into place. That's why you must thank also your good nature, your good karmic past, and your good affinity with Triple Gem and all these things. That's why we will learn to have more and more gratitude towards all that have help us and pave the way for our nature to be what it is today. In fact, all sentient beings are involved. So they play a role. So people who really taught us well, benefited us well, and we have gratitude, when we express this and share, it will come back to us as what we call fruition of what we have done. Later on, when you share, people who have the condition, they will also rejoice. They will also have gratitude towards your nature. That's why this one will grow and this one will continue to evolve. But if you didn't have the correct condition, you get yourself entangled. Then, like Master Xuan Hua said, it's like the blind leading the blind. So when the blind follow the wrong teacher, either teacher go to hell, the student follow. I mean, there is an analogy that Xuanhua gave, but if you look at it, there is a lot of truth, because if you don't investigate like the Buddha, because what he teach you is the truth. You can investigate. That's why don't be gullible, don't blindly believe and follow. If it's the truth, it will stand out to investigation, then things will manifest and unfold beautifully, and your life will become so different. Like what you went through, or like what you experienced, that joy, that understanding, then the marvel of all these type of teachings, they are really amazingly beautiful and wonderful. That's why this Lotus Sutta is called the Wonderful Dhamma, Lotus Flower Sutta. Really wonderful Dhamma. Everything is wonderful when you understand. Then you can understand what is. Like Amy put it, what is true, be wonderful. Sadhu. Anything else there?
Yeah. Yes, very true. What you know, the Lotus Sutra is really, really wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Reading the stories, reading all the stories that pass, I mean, it's so beautiful, you know, that we get to listen to it again, you know. So it's really wonderful that we get to listen to it again.
Yeah.
Now the story is like unbelievable to the mind. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But think about it, you know, I mean, how can it be unbelievable if it happened, you know, in the past, and people can share with you, and tell you, and the Buddha is the one that tell you, you know, it be unbelievable? But of course, the first thing you take is so unbelievable, you know, also can recite can grasp the understanding of the Lotus Sutra, you know.
Correct.
You know, that kind of thing. So it's unbelievable, isn't it? So being a cow is not bad. Also, you get to know the Lotus Sutra. You know what I mean? You think of it, wow, so beautiful, you know. It's really beautiful and unbelievable at the same time. I really enjoy the story, you know, because never heard
unless
of
unless you have the cultivation, you will not appreciate it. There are a lot of people who don't have the affinity, they start to doubt and they say, what type of rubbish is this? So even the initial opening statement, when Sakyamuni Buddha tried to actually teach, share the Dhamma, when he shared the Avalokitesvara Sutta, which is quite profound through teaching, at that time, even those who cultivate the sainthood way, they walk out because they cannot understand and they cannot follow, and to them it's like no, this is not what I want. So they walk out. That's why he need to introduce the provisional teachings to slowly bring about the ultimate teachings. And we sometimes cannot blame all these people, because unless you are in the spiritual field, you are a true cultivator of the way, you have gone through the Bodhisattva way type of cultivation, you will never understand that all these are possible. All these that are mentioned in the sutta and shared in the sutta are possible. But it sometimes appear to people like, hey, this is a lot of what they call science fiction. They call another one like, like you fairy tale, they use the word fairy tale. But the actual thing, if you are in the spiritual path and you truly go through all this, then you will come to realize that the actual thing that happened is even more marvelous, amazing, and fantastic than fairy tale. Fairy tale also not that amazing, but the true happening is not until you witness it, you cannot believe that it can be so amazing. Everything is so perfect, like so beautifully fall into place. And you get to witness and meet up with all these great beings and realize all these great teachings. And this is ordinary people cannot fathom, cannot comprehend. They can't even have a glimpse of what this teaching is, not to say fathom them. That's why without the true cultivator to go through all this, normal people cannot experience any of all this. That's why to them, you cannot blame them for having that type of views and opinion of what this thing is. They cannot believe that these things are possible. Say to them is fairy tale, really for a fairy tale. So all this what we call very unique condition that cultivator can get to experience and go through. So beautiful, Bojack, Sadhu.
Yes, very, very beautiful. Yes, Sadhu, very dear for being guiding us, for guiding us, you know, in explaining all the, you know, difficult part of the sutra as well. Some part is really not easy to understand, which you also guide us, yes.
Correct.
Yes, thank you very much, yes.
Yes, it's me.
I can remember you, Thursday.
I used to come for the Heart Sutra. And
correct, yeah.
I follow all the, Dharma talk.
It's okay, no problem. But recently you have been regular, we see your name.
Yeah, there. Whenever I got time, I will try to come in, but practice-wise, not really.
You need to slowly understand first, don't worry.
I have to try to do some daily mindfulness as well.
That one very important,
Have
you been to the Cameron Highland Retreat before?
No, I don't
know.
I just pensioned only 3 years ago.
Oh, Sadhu, we just retired, just before the pandemic, Sadhu.
And then, 4 years already. I'm busy in the housework, and then because my husband is a Parkinson.
Oh, you have to take care of him,
Take care of him, and then I took cooking and all the housework.
You have to do your duty, yes.
Yeah. So I say practice why no, not really.
Yeah. You but can actually articulate into your daily activity. Whatever you have to do, like your daily household activity, your duty, you can integrate your Dharma cultivation in, because make sure you are aware or mindful whenever you do things. Then anchor your awareness to your bodily movement initially, kaya. Means body and mind move as one. Whatever you do, just develop awareness. Initially, you can start by having a very simple religious routine. Pay your respect, then maybe do the simple chanting like what we do. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa, means homage to the Buddha, the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. So you repeat for 3 times. Take that salutation, it will give you merits. Then you pay your respect. Then after that, you take refuge. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami. Then you repeat. For the second time, Dutiyampi, you go for refuge. Dutiyampi, the third time, you go for refuge. Then after that, you renew your 5 precepts. Then you rejoice. Then you pay respect, triple jap. That itself is good enough. Then you sit for 5-10 minutes initially. Radiate metta, loving kindness, or silence your mind to develop the awareness. Then if you have more time, you may be develop the stability of awareness. Then you can do bowing, you can do walking. Then you integrate it into your duty, your daily life, whatever you do. Walking aware, standing aware, sitting aware, cooking aware, looking after your husband away, then when you speak away, everything develop awareness, the inner awareness. From inner awareness, you develop understanding of what is going on around you. So the inner awareness can be aware of everything that you do. Then when your body and mind move as one, you will know. That's why you have to spend a bit of time on meditation. When you wake up, you have the time, do it. Before you sleep, also do it. Then in between, whenever you are free, maintain mindfulness. Like you say, you try to develop daily mindfulness. That one need training. You must know how to silence your mind. Whenever you are at rest, sleeping or resting, you just silent. That itself is meditation. Okay?
So yeah, yeah. This one. But I really want to say this. I like to whenever I will repeat. Usually, I don't have much time to really sit down to listen to Dhamma talk. But sometimes I have to repeat twice, and then I really fully understand.
Yeah, no problem. In fact, twice you fully understand. Very good already.
And then on and off, so I have to repeat back then to catch the meaning.
Correct, then, because you are new. Yeah, you are
the
new.
The sharing from the Karamita is really very beneficial to me.
Ah, beneficial. The word.
Benefit a lot to me that I really, this is what is happened to me at the same time.
Yeah. Sadhu.
It always from the sharing, I know, I'm also having this same problem.
Yeah, like, reality of life and existence.
I try to get more time to do chanting. Is no problem with me because I used to join with Engbi, Sister Engbi.
Oh, she is very good. You should.
Yeah, we practice.
Make use of Sister Engbi. She is very good. She learned a lot from me.
We practice every Saturday.
Oh, very good, Sadhu. She is a very good Dhamma practitioner.
I'm also very thankful to her. She really teach me a lot, the pronunciation and all sorts of things.
Oh, Sadhu, her Pali also very good. So you all learn chanting also?
Yeah, every Saturday.
Very good. Sadhu.
I'm a slow learner.
No problem. You have Engbi to train you, to guide you. You are very blessed. She is very good. Sadhu. Very good. How do we address you?
My name is Chong Min Hee.
Oh, so Sister Chong.
We call you Lin Hee. Mrs. Kaw.
Oh, Mrs. Kaw. Okay. Your husband is Kaw. Mrs. Kaw.
Meditation at home very difficult for me.
Oh, no problem.
The mind is really like sister. Like yesterday, that one sister, Tammy or something like that.
Tammy,
I having the same problem
initially, most people have, because the mind without the spiritual faculties tend to have the mental hindrance. So when the mental hindrance is there, it make you think a lot and heedless. That's why the mind like monkey cannot stop. Keep on running around. Keep on creating thinking.
I only can do better meditation when I was in the retreat or out from home.
Definitely. But you can develop the training, no problem. As you determine, you slowly train, then it will fall into place. But you must have faith. Then develop the sincerity, the faith. Then persevere, just do. Like every day, do a bit. Every day, do a bit. Then slowly, it become like part of your routine. Just like you listen to this talk. I realize you have come in very often. It's because
whenever I have time, I try to come in. But usually, I will listen after.
After the video is out, the audio. That one will help. The next round of listening actually help. A lot of Karyamita do that. They wait for the audio file and video file to come up. Then they listen.
I was I memang is a very slow learner. I have to listen at least twice.
No problem. Even twice is very good. Yeah.
The real meaning, the real teaching that Brother Teo teaches.
For it to go in. Nice to know that. So at least now we get to know who you are. Because my daughter also asked me before, who is this Lin Hee Cheong? I say, I don't know. Then today, luckily, Sister Po Cheng nominated you. Then when I saw your face, I remember you.
Your face is familiar.
Your face is familiar.
Whenever Sister Indy goes to Bukit Teresa,
yes.
I will follow her car.
Yeah, no wonder. So Thursday class also, you've been there before in Sui An's house.
Sui An one, no, because that time is...
that time you're not retired yet.
Not retired, also have to cook dinner and also something.
Doing your duty.
I got no time for that, but I never miss your talk. Anyway, I was really want to say thank you very much for the
duty. Sadhu, manager rejoice too. And wish you all the best. May the blessing.
I will try.
And may the blessing of the Triple Gem always be with you. So have faith, determined strongly. Then you will become beautiful. You will progress. Sadhu to you.
Sadhu.
Actually, just now Sister Po Cheng was sharing the gratitude. I also felt a lot of gratitude towards Brother Teo. Because since the day one I go to Brother Teo class, you know how bad shape I am.
Correct.
And until today, I find so much peace. As I told PG, I like to be alone, but I'm not lonely. Peace within is so
different now.
The money cannot buy. And I also would like to ask forgiveness from Brother Teo, because there's certain times that I really heedless, and I do have a little bit of doubt.
Don't worry, because all this is taken care of. Whatever Bodhisattva vow, they're all taken care of. So no problem.
And Brother Teo, another thing is I have to use in Chinese.
Use Mandarin, no problem.
Brother Teo, ilu jiang genzi Brother Teo de class, woman ilu zai chen zang. Jue Brother Teo de teaching initially 就很多就是那种好像方便法，就是 接下来 Brother Teo 就 guide 我们进去这个 Bodhisattva way， 连那个就是实修，然后实践啊，实修跟实践我们的 vow 就是这样。
对，
就给我一个，就是 through 刚开始 Sister Po Cheng 的 sharing， 我就敢想到，哎，真的是一步一步的，我们就。就是从所谓的学习然后成长，然后现在我们就是要去实践，就是
对
material the whole thing 这样子
materialize the whole thing，
yes 所以我感觉到真的就好像当下不大在教他的，就是该不就讲的嘛，initially他就是从方便法，就是一个权宜的方法，就是万八千法门嘛，
对，
就让众生的慢慢的去 develop 这个 faith， 然后进去佛法，然后慢慢的就走上菩萨道，
对，
我的内心感到很多的法喜，所以我就出来讲几句，真的很感恩 Radio。
This is very true. Let us rejoice with all the good sharing, especially Sister Po Cheng and Alicia, and including Sister Chong. So we all should rejoice. Sadhu. So nowadays, more and more Kayamita. They actually come to this understanding, then they have a lot of joy and they express them in the form of gratitude. Then they thank all those who have the condition and causes to help them, and also to thank their own good karma too for having that affinity with the Triple Gem. Then to receive this teaching is not easy, like what Sister Po Cheng and Alicia has gone through and shared, and also many Kayamita, because this teaching demands a lot of faith, a lot of sincerity and affinity with the Triple Gem. Otherwise, you cannot receive such teaching. Then such teaching, like Alicia, initially when I tried to teach the Dhamma, I realized people cannot understand. That's why later on I reverse all this and I go to the basic essential Dhamma, and I talk about reality of life and existence, the first number two. Then only slowly I move them in to have the interest in understanding this teaching, because it can solve all of human problem, humanity's problem. So like what Alicia say, use the skillful means, fang pian pa, to teach. Yeah, initially I know a lot of Dhamma practitioner, they don't want the teaching to be very rigid or very full of theoretical Pali word style of teaching. That's why at times we have to add in the what they call fang pian fa to make it interesting. Interesting means you have to share some day-to-day type of life reality and experiences. Then you attract people to listen. Then what my nature also came to know is by introducing the Dhamma in stages, as your understanding develops, you start to evolve your understanding of life and existence, about what life really is. You cover a very much broader aspect of life, in the sense that how civilization evolved, the old and the new, and how we progress as a civilization, as humanity on this earth. Then all this, how we relate the teaching to life, to existence, to connect all the teachings, so that people can make use of the teaching to cultivate with understanding. Well, all this teaching, you cannot connect them into one beautiful, complete teaching, you cannot cultivate. Because my nature realized a lot of Buddhists, they learn the Dhamma in a very theoretical way, in the sense that every essential Dhamma to them is like a different topic, different topic, different topic. So they learn a bit here, they learn a bit there. Then people become gullible. They like the words vipassana, jhana, and all the abhidhamma, the higher teaching errors. But they didn't realize that the essential dhamma are the foundation of the Buddha's teaching, especially the four number two and its three turning. The rest are the spin-off from there. Then all these are connected, related. When you understand the teaching, you realize all the essential Dhamma are connected like a big zigzag puzzle, just like the mind map that my daughter Sui did. You go through that mind map, then you realize, hey, they are all connected, so beautiful. And all these are the foundation of his teaching, the essence of his teaching, that can actually take you all the way to Buddhahood, not only sainthood until arahantship, but way beyond, to cultivate the Bodhisattva way. But all this can only come about later That's why you look at how our Kayanamita grouping evolved. How we started in the year 2004 when Sister Yun Chan invited my nature to come out to share. Then later on, 2008, the second batch Subang site came in. So all this, they actually evolve and unfold in accordance with causes and conditions beautifully. And then my nature just do its duty. Then accord and flow within. Then after that, from 2008 onward, a lot of things happen. Then we have our retreat. We have our Kayamita shift, the sharing. Then the Kayamita force starts to move. Then after that, 2016 onward, the Bodhisattva way came out because of causes and conditions too. And there are many things. Then after that, 2016 until now, 5 years, the Bodhisattva way has been very well established with the vows, the understanding, the books, the transcript, everything. Then the Mahayana Sutta, the higher teachings, all starts to evolve. Then the most remarkable one is the website that came out, the bradatio.com, 2017, I remember, January. The website is only about 4 to 5 years, but we have so much material within and so much sharing, and all our talk and sharing, transcript, publication, they are all recorded. Our activity with all the spiritual trip, our Monday activity, everything, they are all there. And this is really something that is beyond the wildest comprehension of normal living being. Just from Kayanamitas, a small grouping of serious cultivators, we evolve all this. And now with the YouTube sharing, the internet sharing, many other people can also receive, and it has reached out to many. There are many off and on inquiry coming in, asking questions and all those things. And many of them actually listen to my sharing, and they had a lot of joy and all those things. There was also a Singapore guy, I think. He wrote to me, I was very surprised, thank you so much. Then he asked for how he can donate to Kayamita Fund. Then I said, you can contact Suyan. So that's how it started. And there are many whom I don't know, but they said they heard my talk, my sharing. Then they had a lot of joy, but they know, some of them, they know this teaching, you cannot find one. And they feel very blessed to be able to listen to this. Then there's one cultivator, he said he has been listening for many years, but he got no chance to see me, because he don't know me. Then finally, he said he cannot wait anymore. He suddenly, I think, went through the WhatsApp or what. He contacted me. Then I asked him, where is he from? He said he's from Cheras. Then I said, okay, I will introduce Jin Hao to you, where he's helping us. Then Jin Hao get to know him. Then later on, he came and see me. He was telling Jin Hao a lot of things, how he located my sharing and how this sharing has transformed him and helped him a lot. And he said, this teaching he cannot find in other places, is it? It's so beautiful, the daily mindfulness and how to differ. Nobody can teach like that. That's why finally he came and see me too. Then Jin Hao was very excited. He said, but you, this guy, he didn't attend class, but he can understand what you say, all this thing. Oh, and he appreciates so much. That's how all these things are possible. And we have to thank all Kayamitas for creating such conditions, causes and conditions for all this to be possible. That's why it's a mass salute to all those who have made all this possible. And this will evolve. And this is only this life. If you have faith, continue with your understanding, then sincerely walk this way, cultivate and persevere. You will become very beautiful by the next asana. So all these are possible. It can bring forth great opportunity, causes and conditions for Kayamitas to really develop the understanding, cultivate and progress. Then in future, by the next asana, you all will be very beautiful. And you all will be benefiting sentient beings. And a lot of you all will be beautiful beings and cultivated too. So let us rejoice with all the good opportunity, condition, and understanding that has evolved and become what it is today. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
To say rejoice with all the sharings and the well-expressed gratitude towards Brother sharing.
Yeah, sadhu, yeah.
And now actually the Brother Joe pointers are very helpful to us to develop the right attitude towards meditation.
Yes.
Because it gives us an opportunity to identify, because words actually cannot express the
truth. Cannot express the truth.
Because the understanding, concise the understanding and the precise of your understandings.
Yeah.
And that actually summarized the whole practices for us, and it led us to stay focused.
Yes.
Okay. So it's much easier when it comes to meditate of the understanding of the two process of the mind.
Yeah.
We will accept and acknowledge whatever mental factors that arises at that moment as a reality.
Yes. Yes.
And we don't have like last time before we have the understanding, we will try to change the mind, you know,
correct. Like
shouldn't have these thoughts, shouldn't have that, but that is not the solution for it.
Correct. Well, that is the mundane mind doing the reasoning.
Yes. So we are trying like pushing away what is whatever that arise, but that is
the reality. The reality we cannot come to terms with that reality.
Yeah, correct. So now, because of we can understand through your guidance and through the thing, we can put into practice, and we can also witness what is actually the function.
Yeah, sadhu.
That is mentioned.
Yeah, sadhu, yeah.
So from here, I want to encourage Inhi. That the daily mindfulness that what Brother Gil mentioned just now, integrating the Dharma into the daily life.
Yeah.
Because initially I also have a problem because I got a lot of daily tasks and multi tasks.
Your rigid daily routine.
Until I very determined to like find a way out.
Yeah.
So. Then I didn't start my sitting. Because the time is not much, so normally I go into the daily mindfulness first. And that helped a lot.
Yes, definitely.
Because it slowed down the thinking process. On the kaya, using the kaya to work.
To anchor your mindfulness,
Then recently keep on listening to the guidance from the mini video. I found that actually the awareness grows. And it give you a lot of confidence.
Yes.
And last time, when I did the lying meditation, can only come to a stop of that means the stop, the last breath, like last breath, then it stops. Okay. But after the sharing that Brian Teo gave us when we visited your house, when I came back, I find that I want, because I'm supposed to attend the Lotus Sutta class in the evening.
Oh, okay.
And I make up my mind that it's the first lesson, so I must attend. The funny thing is the mind wants to meditate.
Oh, good.
And I feel a bit like tired also, so I just lying there. Then I find that the mind is still active.
Yeah.
During that time. The mind is still active. But because the awareness is there, it actually I feel that I just lying there and surrender my whole body.
That one will help a lot.
I surrender it. And when I did that, I find that actually there is a detachment from the thinking mind.
Yeah.
There's a detachment, then it can see the mind and the body go into a deep relaxation.
Yeah.
And it go into the the consciousness. It's very slow movement, Bratio. Then it go into a deep sleep.
Sadhu. It's actually I have to explain a bit before you continue with the explanation. You see, what happened is when you are able to actually let it be, means you are tired and you want to meditate, then you realize the thinking is still there, active. But this time you didn't resist. You didn't try to do anything. You just let it be. That is awareness. Relax, maintain awareness. Don't try to know. Don't try to do. Then you know what happened or not. You say it appear like your awareness detached from the thinking mind. It's not detached. It's actually your sankhara activity cannot actually create any more delusion in you because you decide to accept it for what it is. You don't want to do anything. So when you do not introduce any more thinking process or willpower to make it otherwise, then this sankhara activity, the mundane mind, like what Jay Krishnamurti said, the very flowering of that sankhara thought process is the very ending of that thought process. Then it starts to slow down. So that's like to you, it's like it's detached. It's actually nothing to do. The awareness is the awareness. The awareness that is aware of what is happening is another process. So that awareness that is aware of this, what they call slowing down of the sankhara activity, then finally going into the more quiet state, then you went into deep sleep because you decide to go into the unconscious or the subconscious, but with the awareness there before you go in, and that is good rest. And when you go through that, you will know how to develop the awareness based meditation when you come out. And this is the way to go in without resistance, without trying to fight or want things your way or alter any mind state. Like I said, whatever arise, let it arise. Thought arise, let it arise. Whatever sense basis that is activated upon contact, like that consciousness, the tactile consciousness, arise, let it arise. I always say, Engby got it very fast. I always say, aware, finish. Aware, finish. You understand? Don't try to know. Aware, finish. Aware, finish, whether it's contact or whatever, whether sankhara or what, aware, finish, aware, finish. Then that momentum to think, to continue, no more. Because you assume you are dead. You let things be. Everything is just the way it is. That is our reality. Without the spiritual faculty stabilized, initially the hindrance take over. That's why eating a lot. Then when the mental hindrance is there, it creates all this heedless thinking, sankhara activity. Then if you try to be resist it and want it to be peaceful, you create more problem for yourself. The thought will be more active because that mind that wants to do something is the mundane mind. It's the egoic mind. And that one is the one that stir and create more activity. So relax, the four support, relax, maintain awareness, don't try to know. Silence everything and just let things be. So whatever arise, finish. Arise, finish. Maintain awareness until it becomes very quiet, quiet, quiet. And then everything will start to slow down, return to its original state, the tranquility, the stillness, then the true mind will surface. And suddenly you will realize that nature, which is very different, then stabilize it. Yeah. Once you can do that, until this thing becomes very stable, then it will help you. Then in future, you will know how to meditate. You will know how to go into all these states like Po Cheng Dee or Alicia Dee. They know how to go in already because they have gone through all this, the stability of it and all those things. So for your case, you also have actually developed much understanding and progress. But early on, the unit could help you a lot. You actually make it a point to understand what I say through the unit code. And those are the things that actually help. Like Engby, she understood the beauty of the unit code until she went and compiled them. That's why when the book come out, she benefited a lot. You also benefited a lot. And many Kayamita who can develop the understanding also benefited a lot. So all these are the understanding. So with this, now you can continue, Ms. Lee.
Then another, the difference is that when you wake up the next morning, there is a, usually when we wake up, we will understand, we will see and we will understand, right? We will. But that day, it's slow. It's very slow. Like the consciousness is not there.
Yeah, it takes a while to come out.
It takes a while and come out. And when it come out, the mind is very light and the there's a unison of the body and mind. Everything you know together. That is the second day. So now it lying meditation is more what I not compared to last time that
it's going to be different again.
Yeah, different again because the snoring doesn't come once. Many.
Yeah. Because every time it snore, that first snore, you aware already. Then your awareness is there. That's why it happened. Because the nature of mind is like that. When you are relaxed and aware, you tend to fall into the subconscious and the unconscious to sleep, to do so. But normal people without awareness, they cannot hear their own snoring. That's why they don't know what is happening. But for us, cultivator, we will know the very first moment, sometime before the snoring finish, the vibration that come out through the hearing consciousness, the awareness that is aware of it, straight away maintain awareness already. Then like you say, after that, it will fall in again. Then before the threshold, you will be aware again. Then you maintain awareness. This will continue for a while. Then after that, you can actually come to understand that all this awareness, unless you are still very tired, it will no longer snow. It will maintain awareness and you will relax and allow the nature to do the trust. Then you just witness the silent awareness, just witness that nature. And then everything will just move on its own without you doing anything. That's why that trust is trust the nature to do, let it move. Then after that, later on, you silence everything and wait for the silent mind to locate the gateway. Then when gateway is located, a lot of things will happen, like what Po Cheng Dee went through. Then you will understand the gateway and all those things. So, sadhu.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank Brother Teo for the continued sharing.
Good. Yes, sadhu to you for your good sharing too. Okay.